February 4th, 1990, Orlando, Florida. 26-year-old Deborah Poe shows up to work the graveyard shift at a Circle K convenience store. At around 4 a.m., the store is discovered to be empty, and Deborah is reported missing. A customer soon comes forward to report that she frequented the store shortly after Deborah was last seen. For unknown reasons, a young man was standing behind the counter and sold her some cigarettes. This mysterious man is never identified, and Deborah Poe is never found. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest minisode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and today we will be covering another classic case which was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, the 1990 disappearance of Deborah Poe. But be warned, if your job involves working the graveyard shift at a convenience store, you might not want to listen to this one, as this story is pretty terrifying. It originally aired on Unsolved Mysteries in November of 1991, and while the segment was only about 6 minutes long, it's still a pretty memorable one, mostly because of an individual whom fans of the show have nicknamed Megadeth Guy. But we'll talk about him momentarily. I previously featured this case in an article I wrote for listverse.com titled 10 People Who Mysteriously Vanished from Their Workplace, which was originally published in September of 2014. But before we get started, just a brief reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast which alternates between our regular full-length episodes and 15 to 20-minute minisodes like this one. We deliver either a new full-length episode or a new minisode every Wednesday. We're currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review at any of these sites, as that will help us garner more exposure. The Trail Went Cold has its own PayPal account and a donate button on the website. If there's anyone out there who's feeling generous and wants to make a donation, we would greatly appreciate it, and we'll give you a shout-out on a future episode. We actually recently received a new donation from a listener named Shay, so thank you very much, Shay. So with that out of the way, let's get started and examine the unsolved disappearance of Deborah Poe. Our story begins in 1990 in Orlando, Florida. Our central figure is 26-year-old Deborah Poe, who originally hails from Virginia, but moved to Orlando just 4 months earlier. Deborah works the graveyard shift at a local 24-hour Circle K convenience store, but she also has a day job in the retail sales department of the Orlando Sentinel. Deborah decided to take on the second job and work 5 nights a week at the Circle K because she really wants to save up money to buy a house and eventually open up her own catering business. On February 4th, Deborah showed up for the graveyard shift, which lasted from 11 p.m. until 7 a.m. Since this required Deborah to work alone, she was often visited at the store by friends who would keep her company and check up on her. On this particular shift, Deborah was visited by her boyfriend, Scott Iagi, who stopped by to chat with her shortly after 11 p.m. before he left. He returned to the store at around 3:50 a.m. and was surprised to discover that the store was completely empty. Deborah's neatly folded Circle K smock was still inside the store, and there was a cup of coffee and a carton of chocolate milk behind the counter. But Deborah herself was nowhere to be found. Deborah's locked car was also still parked out front, and her purse, paycheck, and car keys were still inside. The police were notified, and when they surveyed the store, they found no sign of any struggle or robbery, as the cash register was still locked. The last verified sighting of Deborah was from a customer whom she served shortly after 3 a.m. A police dog was brought in, and it detected Deborah's scent, tracing it from the rear of the store through a wood slat fence. The scent went away at a nearby road, which seemed to indicate that Deborah had gotten into a vehicle and left the scene. The evidence suggested that Deborah had been abducted, but by whom? Well, this is where the case took a pretty unusual and creepy turn. After Deborah's disappearance was publicized, a witness came forward to say that she had frequented the Circle K that night sometime between 3:15 and 3:30, and that Deborah wasn't there. But here's the really weird part. Instead of Deborah, there was a young man standing behind the counter. He was wearing a t-shirt for the heavy metal band Megadeth, and this is why he has been immortalized by Unsolved Mysteries fans as Megadeth Guy. The description made him sound like a total metalhead, as he had long stringy black hair, a skull ring on his finger, and a wire earring with a cross on it. Anyway, the customer assumed that Megadeth Guy was an employee and asked him for a pack of cigarettes. He seemed to have trouble finding the branch he wanted, so the customer had to point him towards it. The customer then paid for the cigarettes, and I'm assuming it must have been exact change because I don't believe the cash register was ever opened. Megadeth Guy then remarked, "You really shouldn't smoke, you know," before the customer left the store. So the police released a composite sketch of this man and asked him to come forward. But as far as I know, no one ever did, and he was never positively identified. It was speculated that Deborah's case might be connected to the disappearances of two other Florida women who vanished while working the graveyard shift at convenience stores during this time period. On September 18, 1989, 36-year-old Darlene Messer went missing during her shift at a store in Lake City and was found bludgeoned to death 2 days later. To this day, her murder has never been solved. Just 1 month before that, on August 6, 29-year-old Donna Callahan, who happened to be 3 months pregnant at the time, disappeared while working at a convenience store in Gulf Breeze, and her remains were not discovered until 7 years later. Pretty freaky that all three of these women were convenience store clerks whose first names happened to start with the letter D. However, a pair of half-brothers, William Alex Wells and Mark Reeb, they were eventually charged and convicted of Donna Callahan's murder. They are currently serving life sentences, but there's never been any evidence to tie them to Deborah Poe's disappearance. In March of 2002, police searched a lot behind the Chapel Hill Baptist Church, which is located about 5 miles from the Circle K. Since dogs detected the scent of human remains, investigators suspected that Deborah's body might be buried there, but when they dug the area up, they failed to find anything. Police have not discounted the possibility that human remains were buried there at some point, but they have failed to turn up any trace of Deborah Poe. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So after hearing this story, I'm sure one of the first things you were wondering is, what about surveillance footage? Well, believe it or not, this particular Circle K did not actually have any security cameras. Sure, this was 26 years ago, and security cameras probably weren't as common as they are today, but it's still pretty irresponsible to allow a young woman to work the graveyard shift alone 5 nights a week without proper protection. But sadly, Deborah did have her fair share of incidents in which she was harassed by male customers. Just 2 weeks before her disappearance, a naked man actually walked into the store and chased Deborah around until she was able to lock him outside. As far as I know, they never identified this naked guy, so I guess we can't completely rule him out as a suspect. After an incident like that, it's pretty negligent that management did not go out of their way to provide extra security measures for Deborah and still let her work the graveyard shift alone like usual. But it's also possible that Deborah may have been victimized by someone she knew. As you may or may not know, in 2008, Spike TV attempted to do a modernized reboot of Unsolved Mysteries, which was hosted by the late Dennis Farina, and the whole thing turned out to be a complete abomination. But that's a rant for a different time. Anyway, at one point, the show re-aired Deborah Poe's story, and threw in an update at the end in which they casually mentioned that police now considered one of Deborah's friends to be a suspect. Unfortunately, they didn't provide any more details, and here's where the usage of the word friend causes confusion. In the original Unsolved Mysteries segment, they say that one of Deborah's friends visited her shortly after 11 o'clock, and then discovered her missing at 3:50. It's only after reading the newspaper articles about the case that I learned that this friend was actually her boyfriend, Scott Yagi. And one article mentioned that he was given a lie detector test and passed. However, if you search YouTube, you can find a short documentary about Deborah Poe's case which was made as a class project by a Full Sail University student named Ethan Quinn. The documentary addresses the search for human remains which took place in the lot behind the Chapel Hill Baptist Church. It then goes on to mention that Scott Yagi lived across the street from this church and actually became a preacher there. In an Orlando Sentinel article from 2002, a detective says the lot was near the home of a suspect in the case, but does not elaborate on this. So is Scott Iagi the friend who is considered the prime suspect by police? Well, no suspect has ever been named publicly, and I really don't know anything about him or his relationship with Deborah, so I can't be sure. I'm sure some people might find it suspicious that Scott discovered that Deborah was missing when he visited the store at 3:50 a.m. Why would he be visiting her at such a late hour? If he was responsible, then this could have been a ploy to create an alibi for himself. Well, truth to be told, I don't find the 3:50 a.m. visit to be that unusual. I used to work an overnight job, and I can tell you that this sort of thing happens all the time. While I didn't actually work at a convenience store, I would often frequent convenience stores in the middle of the night during break time, and it wasn't uncommon to see the clerks chatting it up with friends inside the store or chatting with someone on their cell phone. Hell, I'd also see my coworkers speaking with their friends on their cell phones at all hours of the night. It seems like people who work the graveyard shift often have no trouble finding people to keep them company at odd hours. And remember, Deborah had just been chased around the store by a naked man only 2 weeks earlier. Deborah's friends and family never wanted her to work the graveyard shift to begin with, and for a while, Scott would even stop by to work her shifts with her until she convinced him it wasn't necessary. After the incident with the naked man, I couldn't blame Scott for stopping by multiple times during the night to check up on her. So I guess that brings us to the infamous Megadeth guy, who is pretty much the reason this case is often cited as one of the all-time scariest unsolved mystery segments. And it probably has a lot to do with the actor they cast to play him in the reenactment. The suspect was described as being around 5'10", but the actor they found to play him was enormous, and he looks like the type of guy you wouldn't want to meet in a convenience store in the middle of the night while you're by yourself. It would not surprise me at all if there are stories of people crossing paths with the actor and then calling the Unsolved Mysteries tip line because they believed he was the real Megadeth guy. But as scary as this guy sounds, was he actually responsible for Deborah Poe's disappearance? And if he wasn't, why was he standing behind the counter of the Circle K and serving customers? Well, as weird as this whole situation is, it does seem unlikely that Megadeth guy would still be in the store at this point if he was involved. He was placed there around 15 to 30 minutes after Deborah was last seen, and that doesn't sound like nearly enough time for him to abduct Deborah, stash her body somewhere, and then return to the store. I guess it's possible that Deborah could have been tied up in the back room, or was even being held hostage by an accomplice, while Megadeth guy waited on the customer. But given that there were no signs of struggle inside the store, that scenario just doesn't seem too plausible. The evidence suggests that Deborah may have been abducted while outside the Circle K. I think it's more likely that Megadeth guy was just a random customer who walked into the store, discovered no one was there, and then wandered behind the counter. It's at this exact moment that the female customer came walking in. At this point, most people would just remark that there doesn't seem to be anyone working there, but I have a feeling that Megadeth guy was taking advantage of the situation and attempting to steal something. The female customer caught him off guard, so he just went through the motions of pretending to be a clerk and then rang her transaction through. While there didn't seem to be any signs of robbery, that's probably because the cash register was locked and Megadeth guy couldn't get it open. If he just decided to steal a few packs of cigarettes, some booze, or some food before leaving the store, then a couple of missing items probably wouldn't be noticed. Even though the police sent out a public plea for this guy to come forward, it's easy to see why he wouldn't. For one thing, he'd have to admit to shoplifting and explain his bizarre decision to pretend he was a clerk. The police might find his actions to be suspicious enough to accuse him of Deborah's disappearance, even if he was completely innocent. I did find an Orlando Sentinel article from 1996, which implied that the police didn't really consider Megadeth guy to be a suspect anymore, but thought he might have been a witness to something. The article also brought up the possibility that he was actually the boyfriend of another clerk who worked there at the time, but if that's the case, then it's surprising they wouldn't have been able to find him. But in the end, I do believe Megadeth guy is nothing more than a giant red herring. I won't rule out the possibility that he saw something that night and might have important information, but I ultimately don't think he was responsible for what happened to Deborah. Since there were no signs of struggle inside the store, it seems to me like she was lured outside. I do find it weird that Deborah's work smock was left behind and neatly folded, but maybe she just decided to take it off in order to meet someone outside or take a cigarette break or something, and that's when she was forced into a vehicle and abducted before she was subsequently murdered. I guess it's also possible that someone might have forced her to leave the store at gunpoint, which is why there are no signs of any struggle. If the police really do consider one of Deborah's friends or her boyfriend to be the prime suspect, then I won't disagree with that logic. There are signs which point to Deborah being abducted by someone she knew, rather than the mysterious Megadeth guy. This might be one of those cases where investigators are pretty certain about who they think was responsible, but just can't do anything without a body. So if you have any information about what happened to Deborah Poe, or if you actually know who Megadeth guy is, please contact the appropriate authorities. And also please get in touch with them if you happen to have any information about the murder of Darlene Messer, as that case is still unsolved as well. But if you just have your own theory about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. I want to thank all my loyal listeners and supporters out there, especially those from the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thank you to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. And like I mentioned earlier, we also have a donate button on our website. So if you're feeling generous and want to express your appreciation for all the hard work we put into this podcast, we'd be extremely grateful. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for a brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold.